The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Zen Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts.
This is case number 28 from the Blue Cliff Record Koan Collection. Nan Chuan's Non-Explanation. Nan Chuan came to Acharya Baizhang Nipan. Baizhang asked, "Is there a secret and supreme Dharma which has not been expounded by any of the holy ones of the past?" Nan Chuan replied, "Yes, there is." "What is the secret and supreme Dharma which has not been expounded for people?" "This is not mind. This is not Buddha. This is not beings." You would say that. "That's exactly what I would say. What about you?" "I'm not a great Chan master. How can I know whether there is or not there is a Dharma that's never been expounded for people?" "I don't understand." "I already explained it fully to you." So this cryptic little dialogue comes to us from Tang Dynasty, China. And let me say a little something about each of the two speakers. Nan Chuan, one of our great ancestors who comes up in various places in the Koan collections in our Koan curriculum. And you might, most graphically, he comes up and you might remember him from this Koan in the Koan about cutting a cat in two. Yes, that was Nan Chuan. Nan Chuan kills the cat. But this is before he has his own assembly. So no cats have been harmed at this point in the Dharma talk. And so Baizhang, you might think, oh, well, that must be Baizhang who features in Baizhang's Fox. But no, that was this Baizhang's teacher, Baizhang Huaihai. This is Baizhang Nipan. So a little something about how these two teachers are related. So Nan Chuan is a direct Dharma heir of great teacher Matsu. Matsu transmitted the Dharma to Nan Chuan. Baizhang's teacher, the other Baizhang, the older Baizhang, was also a direct heir of Matsu. So they're both in the Matsu lineage. And this Baizhang, Baizhang Nipan, was the Dharma heir of the elder Baizhang. Why are they both called Baizhang? Because that's not their given name. That's not their Dharma name. It's the name of the monastery where they taught, Mount Baizhang. And this is frequently the case with the Tang Dynasty teachers. They tend to be named for the monasteries that they taught at, the mountain monasteries in most cases. So interesting to think of this. Both of them in the Matsu lineage, both of them close to what some of the greatest teachers in the Tang Dynasty, Baizhang Sr. and his teacher Matsu. One of them is older. Baizhang Nipan is actually older, and he's clearly already established in his own monastery. That is, he's already become the abbot of Mount Baizhang Monastery. So the elder Baizhang is evidently dead by now. Nan Chuan is, on the other hand, is a direct heir of Matsu, not the heir of the heir of Matsu. So in some ways that makes him kind of senior, even though he's younger. And yet Nan Chuan is still on his wandering period, his wanderings, in his wandering period. So often in Tang Dynasty China, someone would receive transmission from their teacher, as Nan Chuan did from Matsu, and then go wandering for a period of years. This was a big part of Tang Dynasty practice, of Chan practice, wandering. And so in his wanderings, Nan Chuan's come to Mount Baizhang and has this encounter with Baizhang Nipan. So who is the senior one here? who is has the greater Dharma authority? Maybe neither. Maybe these two are well matched for the little Dharma combat, the episode of Dharma play that follows. Nanchuan came to Acharya Baijong Nipan. Baijong asked, "Is there a secret and supreme Dharma which has not been expounded by any of the holy ones of the past?" So Baijong starts this dialogue going and asks quite an interesting question. Is there a secret? It sounds almost like he's asking, "Did you get the secret handshake? Is there a secret and supreme Dharma which has not been expounded by any of the holy ones of the past?" It also sounds like he's saying, "Show me what you got, kid." Yeah, here you are, Matsu's Dharma heir. Wow, okay. I'm just the heir of Dharma's of Matsu's Dharma heir. So what can you tell me that I don't already know? Tell me something new here. And there's still other ways that we can understand this. And so, is there a secret and supreme Dharma which has not been expounded by any of the holy ones of the past? As I've been sitting with this koan, I'm realizing that there are multiple places it could just stop, and it would still be a great koan. So imagine for a moment that it stops there. Baijong asks, "Is there a secret and supreme Dharma which has not been expounded by any of the holy ones of the past?" And let me ask each one of you, I'm asking all of you right now. This isn't in the past anymore. Right now, is there, what do you think? Is there a secret and supreme Dharma which you can't find in any book, which isn't in any of the sutras, any of the koan collections? Anywhere in our chant book, is there a secret and supreme Dharma which has not been expounded by any of the holy ones of the past? Serious question. It sounds a little cheeky at first, but it's quite deadly serious. Deadly in that it goes straight to the great matter of birth and death. But the koan doesn't stop there. So Baijiang asks this question, and Nanchuan replies, "Yes, there is." I'm always tempted to kind of laugh at this point because it sounds so cheeky. Oh yeah, there is. Yeah, secret and supreme Dharma. Yep, you asked the right guy here. What a great response! What a wonderful way of stepping up. Yes, there is. But what about you? So again, what if the koan stopped there? Is there a secret and supreme Dharma which has not been expounded by any of the holy ones of the past? Yes, there is. And so now your work with the koan, your play with the koan, would be to sit with that. Okay, so what is it? What's your answer? What do you say? What the secret and supreme Dharma that's never been uttered, that Shakyamuni Buddha himself never said. Ananda didn't hear that one if he did. It's never been set down. We have no access to it, or do we? Or do we have total access to it? So Nanchuan replies, "Yes, there is." And so now Baijiang Nipan picks it up again. It's a little bit like a tennis match. Now the ball's in his court. So, okay. What is the secret and supreme Dharma which has not been expounded for people? All right, step up. Let's hear it. Let's make sure you're not just talking through your hat here. And so Nanchuan answers, "This is not mine. This is not Buddha. This is not beings." This part is very characteristic of Chan teaching and Zen teaching in general. Chan, of course, being Zen when it was still in China before it went to Japan. We just read together the Heart Sutra with all those no's. Right? No eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue, no body, no suffering, no end to suffering. Oh, really? Isn't that one of the Four Noble Truths? No, none of that. We won't have any of that. So the taking everything away, let's take it away. Why do our ancestors want to take so much away? How does that help us? Just when we got the four, the four this or the nine that or the six the other, someone comes and takes it away. Oh, all that work we did, all that study we did, all that listening we did for nothing? Well, maybe not. So this is not mind, this is not Buddha, this is not beings. Notice that this contradicts all kinds of things elsewhere in our koan curriculum and in our sutra book, even. For example, let's go back to Matsu, who's Nanchuan's teacher, and who is the teacher of Baizhang Nipan's teacher, Baizhang Huaihai. Dame asks, this is Gateless Gate, case 30. Dame asks Matsu, what is Buddha? Matsu said, this very mind is Buddha. Oh. Okay, so Nanchuan's teacher says this very mind is Buddha, but now Nanchuan starts out by saying this is not mind. Does that mean he has gone beyond his teacher? Does that mean he's being disrespectful to his teacher? He's off on his own now, so yeah, fuck you, Matsu. I'm not going to be spreading your teaching. I've got a better one. I don't think that's what's happening here. But it sounds a little bit like it. There's another a story, by the way, that's not in our koan collection that sounds very similar to this part of this koan. I'll read it to you. It's also, again, about Nanchuan. And this is when Nanchuan was teaching in his own monastery. So this happens later. Once Zen Master Nanchuan, so now he's a Zen master, no longer wandering. Once Zen Master Nanchuan said, Master Matsu of Jiangxi, his teacher, Master Matsu of Jiangxi said, mind is Buddha. But old teacher Wang doesn't talk that way. It is not mind. It's not Buddha. It's not a thing. Is there any error in speaking thus? Zhao Zhou, Nanchuan's student, then bowed and went out. So this isn't the only time that Nanchuan comes up with this formula. Not mind, not Buddha, not beings, although most translations like this say not a thing, nothing at all. This is not Buddha. We just recited the words of a later Zen teacher, this one a Japanese teacher, saying all beings by nature are Buddha. And now we've got not Buddha, not beings. By the way, there's another koan in the Gateless Gate about Matsu, where a monk asked Matsu what is Buddha, and Matsu said, not mind, not Buddha. So just what's going on here? Is it mind? Is it not mind? Is it Buddha? Is it not Buddha? Is it beings? Is it not beings? Why are we being, why are the ancestors torturing us like this? Or is that what they're doing? Are they trying, are they teasing us, or are they trying to tease something out of us? Are they leaving us speechless, or are they inviting us to speak? So, Nanchuan says, this is not mind. This is not Buddha. This is not beings. And Baizhang Nipan replies, you would say that. It's as though he knows about this later story about Nanchuan already. Yeah, that's what Nanchuan says. You would say that. That's your thing. And I like the fact that Nanchuan again comes right back. Yeah, that's exactly what I would say. Thanks for listening. That's exactly what I would say. What about you? Okay, now the tables are turned. Now I, the young upstart, the wandering one. Now I'm going to ask you Show me what you got. Let's turn things around. You don't get to ask all the questions. Or does he? Because now Baijiang Nipon replies, "Oh, I'm not a great Chan master. Like Matsu, like Nanchuan will be. I'm not like my teacher Baijiang, the other Baijiang, the senior Baijiang, the famous one with his fox. I'm not a great Chan master. How can I know whether there is a Dharma that has never been expounded for people? Well, I'm not a great Chan master either. You aren't great Chan masters either. So how can we know whether or not there's a Dharma that has never been expounded for people? What if that's a real question and not a rhetorical one? How can we know? How can we know whether or not there's a Dharma that's never been expounded for people, that's never been uttered, that's never been written down, that's never been handed down, that's not part of a secret transmission from teacher to teacher? And now Nanchuan's a little bit back on his heels. I don't understand. Or is he? Or is that like a pretty aggressive answer? Oh, I don't understand. What kind of not understanding is this? Is this like when a young monk says in an interview, "I don't know," or is this like when Bodhidharma says, "I don't know," to Emperor Wu when he says, "Who's this standing before me?" Is this "I don't know," or is this not knowing? Is this the not knowing that's most intimate? I don't understand. And then Baijiang Nipon answers, "I already explained it fully to you." And this, of course, is a message to all of us. We're at the end of this koan saying, "Wait a second, what's left here? I don't know where to stand anymore. These two guys have spun me around completely. I thought I knew something about Zen. Now I don't understand." And the message to us is, no, it's just been fully explained. It's right there. And so rather than go on, let me just say, I'm not going to investigate this koan for you further. I've already explained it fully to you. Thank you. So this is our chance to come forward in Dharma dialogue. And please go ahead and raise your Zoom hands. And you can ask about the koan, you can ask about anything. This is not just a chance to delve into the koan, although there are certainly plenty of questions and comments and responses that could come up. So now it's you, your turn. Now the tables are turned on you. Who's going to arise to this occasion, the way our two Chan teachers just did? Yes, Madhu.
Yeah, such interesting teachers, Zen masters, both of them. And I don't know, I'm not sure which approach I like better or worse, but I see myself in both of them. You know, sometimes, although I know that I do not know the Dharma, I have to speak it out and I have to say, you know, this is nothing, or you know, I have to make that statement out loud and clear. But sometimes I just stay in that understanding of not knowing, and maybe I say I don't understand or I don't say much. But I see value in both of those approaches. Like, you know, if I say, you know, if I sit back and, you know, not say anything, or you know, just embody the not knowing, there is also value, and I feel like there's also some modesty in that, humility maybe in that. But also there's this sense of knowing that, you know, just makes me feel empowered within that. But also in Ma Zhu or Nanchuan's case, even to, you know, just own that not knowing and to be able to verbalize that and say that, yes, I mean, you know, and to be able to step forward and represent that, that also means a lot. So I see both those sides and I appreciate it so much. I don't know what more to say other than that.
Yeah, no, nothing more needs to be said. You just said it all, Madhu. And I really appreciate what you said about humility, because it brings out the fact that, so on the one hand, these seem like two teachers sparring with each other, and each one is being kind of aggressive and ballsy, you know, like, yeah, there is a secret. Oh, tell me about it. But each one has a moment of humility, which is that, you know, Baijiang Nipon says, how can I know? How can I know whether? And then Nanchuan says, I don't understand. And so each of them presents both of those sides, the two sides that you presented to us. Each of us presents the side of, and if called upon to speak, I will speak. Here it is. And the other side of, I don't know. Just bowing. So, also inviting Dharma Holder Paul to come forward if he wishes and help me respond to any of your comments or questions. Bowing to you, Madhu. Orna.
Yeah, thank you for the talk, Alan. I'm stepping forward. It was good to hear Madhu, but I liked hearing the word humility, and I don't feel it here at the moment. It's interesting because I had a reaction, and it was, I'm sick of combat. I'm sick of Dharma combat. I'm sick of ballsy. I'm sick of all of that. That's what I felt. I had a really big sort of whoa. And it feels almost dangerous to see that. I feel it's like whoa. So I'm not sure what's happening with this. Because then it felt like an arrogant part saying, well, of course there is something that has never been spoken. And I feel almost tearful saying that. I don't even know why. So it's kind of like this huge wave of, something about the thinking and the arguing about it. Maybe it's really good for me, but it's like literally sometimes it just does my head in, and it's like I want to lie down on the ground. I want to listen to the earth. I don't. My God. So this is what's here. It's strong,
Wonderful.
and
Wonderful.
here it is.
Yeah, thank you, Orna. And you know, part of what you're responding to is the Matsu tradition. Matsu is the one who introduced shouts and blows to Chan practice. That's where the stick comes from. That's where the shout comes from. That was Matsu's contribution. And that eventually became the Rinzai tradition in or the Linji tradition in China and the Rinzai tradition in Japan. Baijiang seniors, another one of his students, Wang Bo, would be the teacher, the transmitting teacher of Linji. And so we're very close to Linji too here. And so these were aggressive teachers. And really interesting to me, and really encouraging to me, that out of your reaction to this conflict, like, oh, this is so male coded, blah, you know, also came this, you said, almost tearful. So there it is, right? There's the heart mind responding to this question. Is there a teaching that's never been expounded? And that's exactly where we go for the answer, is the heart mind. And so that tearfulness, on the right track, to say the least. Paul.
Yeah, and one of the things that I really appreciated when Alan was saying Dharma combat, in the very next sentence, he said, play. And I can read this, and it seems like this Dharma combat. But another student not too long ago expressed to me that this is almost like an Abbott and Costello skit. They're kind of going back and forth, these old American comedic pairing. And I think both of them are so sincere that they really are begging, wishing, enticing the best out of each other in this particular way. And I think that's where the tears are coming from, potentially for you, is that you hear this yearning, please. Please tell me, show me, reveal the heart of the matter. In each line, they're really inviting the next person to keep coming forward. And I think that's what this koan is doing for all of us. It's really asking, enticing, inviting us to step forward, just as you have, just as you have. Thanks, Orna.
Eva.
Yeah, thank you very much for the talk, Alan, and for everyone else who's spoken. And thank you for enlightening us about the secret Dharma. Now we know. I can't remember exactly what it was. It made me raise my hand 10 minutes ago or so, but I think we can get very hung up on language and trying to refer or explain something which is in language, which is completely beyond language. And similarly with a not, to understand the not as the opposite of there is. And it doesn't feel to me like that. It's more like it's not this and it's not that. It's completely beyond that. And what you and Ortner were saying about it's an understanding with the heart mind is you need, and these dialogues for me have a function of just dizzying me so much that the mind completely goes out of the window. And so it points to a completely different understanding, which can't be captured in words. So, yeah, that's what it left me with. And I think also a sense of reverence of, I don't know. I have a suspicion. I have an inkling, occasionally a tiniest of glimpses. But the humility that Madhu was talking about of, it's not something for me to capture. It captures me, really. Yeah. So that's how it felt.
Yeah,
Thank you.
wonderfully said. I really like the way you finished your contribution. And it can't be put into words, but you have to say something. So there's those two sides of it. As Dongshan says, the meaning does not reside in the words, but a pivotal moment brings it forth. But the words helped us prepare us for the pivotal moment. So we don't, so someone says, not mind, not Buddha, not beings. That's not it. But does that help point us towards where it might be? Another teacher, Shito, says, thousands of words, myriad of interpretations are only to free you from obstructions. So were some of us being obstructed by mind, by Buddha, by beings? There was a whole mind-only school of Buddhism in China at this time. Was that obstructing people? So is that why Ma Tzu himself moved from this very mind as Buddha to not mind, not Buddha? Does something become a pointer, pointing us in the right direction, and then does the wind flip it so it's pointing us directly away, and we have to now take the sign away and say, not this way. So don't follow this path.
But follow that scent. that you were talking about, Ava, it really reminds me of when you said that the ship of compassion in this aspect, we get a whiff, we get a little fragrance, and as if I were aboard the ship of compassion. And there is this aspect of that we do follow, Alan's already pointed out and Orna pointed out, follow with our heart, and we follow with everything. So we follow with our nose, we follow with our whole being, it includes the mind, but it's not just the mind. And so whatever entices us forward, breathe in. Get a good sniff of this, and keep following that. Yeah, thanks.
Beth.
I think what I was going to say is pretty similar. It's like often in a Zen teaching, the words kind of build a little narrative, a house, and then somebody comes along and kicks down the house. And it's like, okay, don't cling to that. It's conceptual. It's the finger pointing to the moon. It's not the moon. And once we start to think we have this intellectual grasping, we just have to let go. It just seems like a common pattern. And then after a while, you're like, okay, they're going to kick it down. And that's okay.
Yeah, not only okay, but part of the message, I was as I was listening to you, I was imagining, remembering. I assume some of us did this as children, built a house of cards, which is really hard to do, but it's also really fun to do. And so, there they are building this house of cards. And what came up for me is, well, what if the space inside is it? And we need to, even though we know that this is just a house of cards and one good breath is going to knock it all down, which was part of the fun, right, of the house of cards, was blowing it down. Like you could be the big bad wolf in the folk tale, in the Three Little Pigs. And so, but what if it's the space that's opened up by this house of cards? And then the cards are blown away and the space just opens wide up, and we get a huge spaciousness. Thank you, Beth. Pierce.
Thanks, Alan. I'm actually thinking of a talk that Alan gave on Sunday night, which was about words. And he talked about the fact that words are impediments. There's no doubt about it. We say tree, and we don't look at the tree. We don't encounter what this word designates. And on the other hand, he had this wonderful metaphor of doors. A word could be a door that is closed, and the word is on the door, or the word could be on the lintel, and the door is open. That the word actually opens us to something that we weren't aware of. And I'm also thinking of Matsu, who said, "Mind is Buddha," and said, "Not mind, not Buddha." And I think that, this contradictory nature of koans, I think that Eva put her finger on it. It's to ensure that we don't try to develop a rule of thumb that is applicable in all situations. Words are bad, and the encounter with the tree is good. So I'll apply that to everything from here on in. Let's not do that. Let's realize that duality is something that is a human habit, to see things as dual, and that there's something beyond that. And what is beyond that? I just loved what Orna said about lying down on the ground and listening to the earth. And it reminded me of What the Buddha does when he's confronted by Mara, he puts his hand on the earth, and that's where it is.
Thank you, Pierce. And you know, interesting that you were talking about words that can be openings, but then also, you know, the denial of words can be an opening. So not mind, not Buddha, not beings. And an interesting thing about that is it gives you, as you hear that, you think, oh, mind, Buddha, beings, and then also not mind, not Buddha, not beings. You, in a sense, you get both. If you say not mind, not Buddha, then you get both mind and Buddha, and not mind and not Buddha. You can't speak the word without inviting a kind of exploration of it. Even as you're wiping it away, you're also putting it forward. So kind of interesting. It's kind of an interesting exercise, as though you're writing with an etch-a-sketch and then shaking it. But there's that moment where you see on the etch-a-sketch mind, and then it gets shaken and it's not mind. Very curious way of teaching.
Indeed, indeed. And I think it, highlights what you're saying, Pierce, as well, that we do live this life of duality. And you had mentioned that, going beyond it, and going beyond isn't about escaping this world of duality. The using Alan's example, we really do play on that etch-a-sketch and we shake it up. And we shake it up and then we play on the etch-a-sketch. And so this aspect of noticing what we're grasping at, what Beth was pointing at earlier, we get to actually see what we grasp at. It's not like, oh, my goal is to not grasp, or my goal is to not use words. Of course we use words, of course we grasp, and watch that grasping, noticing that. And it's in that awareness and in that noticing that, that opening, that hand of thought, comes up, just to be with what is here.
I
Thanks,
hadn't
Pierce.
realized that Etch-a-Sketch would take on a life of its own.
It does.
But now that it has, I realize there's a big hint there. So you're sitting with someone and they've just written or drawn something on the Etch-a-Sketch, and then they hand the Etch-a-Sketch to you and say, okay, your turn. What's the first thing you do? So, Boundless Way Temple.
Yeah, I was resonating with a lot of what people are saying, with what Orna was saying in the beginning, around the Dharma combat. What comes up for me, or what came up for me this time was, I guess wondering, like, how would two Buddhist nuns go about this? Would it, just wondering if it would look different or what it would be like. So that's, I think it's me, I'm sure that history is there. It's just not necessarily written, so I don't hear about it. I guess that's kind of how I resonated with that. And I found myself, when I was listening to it, getting confused, like, who was saying what? Because I wanted to put, one as the teacher, one as like the student, maybe one who knows more, one who knows less. So that kind of what other people have been saying around making that dichotomy. And that was another thing that came up.
Yeah, thanks, Aaron. Yeah, and that's it's really tempting, right? We encounter a dialogue koan like this, and part of us wants to set up a hierarchy. Okay, who's the boss? Who's in charge? Who's the wiser one? Who's the less wise one? Who's the more authoritative one? The less authoritative one? And in my presentation of it, I tried really hard to resist that. Not. And I find that I'm not the first to do that. But about that, we do have that wonderful koan about the nun who was called Iron Grinder Lu because she was so tough. She's like an iron grinder. She would put her students through the grinder. And Iron Grinder Lu gives as good as she gets. We don't have a koan about Iron Grinder Lu and another nun. That's true. But I expect that there were some pretty tough nuns back there, if Iron Grinder Lu is any kind of a example. And when we have poems by Chan nuns, some of whom were transmitted teachers, and they're not that different from the poems by Chan monks who became transmitted teachers. And in fact, maybe at Skyflower sometime soon, we'll look into some of those and mix up the genders and see if we can detect a difference. So thank you for pointing to that, Aaron. So there was one hand for all four people in the temple. Anyone else at the temple wanted to speak? Yeah, Francesca.
Hi, thank you for your talk. What came up for me was like that they
Could you
used.
speak up a little, Francesca? I'm
Oh,
having trouble hearing.
came up for me was that they used the word secret, and secret usually implies that it's there, but somebody's hiding it and not saying it. And then the other word that came up for me was undiscoverable. Like, well, maybe it's out there and nobody's discovered it. I don't know. I don't know if that's what came up for me. So what do you think the secret was all about?
Yeah, well, interesting that you raise that, because secret does not come up in other translations I looked at. That seems to be John Terence's addition. And so then the question for me would be, what is John Terence pointing us towards? And for me, it was that what he's helping us to do is reveal to us our own wish to know that for there to be a secret that someone could tell us. I think we've all been there in Zen study and had that moment when we were sitting there, maybe in the Doksan room with a teacher, just thinking, "Oh, just tell me. I know you know. Just tell me." And maybe when we were working on a koan, we looked at a senior student and just wanted to say, "Come on, tell me. I can't figure this koan out. You know." But of course, if the senior student told you, that wouldn't be it anymore. We call that stealing someone's treasure. When you give away too much, and we also say the family treasure doesn't come in through the door. So the family treasure is there already, and so the secret is kind of a temptation, and one that I encourage all of us to resist.
Yeah, and also to observe. I love this aspect of focusing on secret. The contemporary Zen teacher Barry Magid talks about that we to reveal our own secret practices. That many of us have this wish, this secret wish. That in many cases is not revealed to us, that we want to be better or we want to be good or we're seeking something. And I think it's really good to shine a light on that. And I love the way Alan was presenting this koan in the sense of what if we just stopped here? And I think this is a good place for you to stop, Francesca, is that, what is this? The secret practice. I mean, I'm changing the words here, but what is the secret unexpressed dharma? And just stay with that as far as for you, and to notice what comes up for you.
Massimo.
As I said, I'm new to Zen, so I don't have a lot of knowledge about this, but one of the things that for me was when I would say it's not mind, it's not Buddha, it's not being. I remember something in one of these Dharma situations I was able to saying, so forget, basically, so forget mind, forget Dharma, forget being, but then forget that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I know it's, you know, it's kind of like a pretty common saying or whatever, but again, what came up for me was that, you know, you never really get there. You know, this whole path is the goal type of thing, that, you know, there is no final answer. The answer is to just keep going or to keep exploring, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it makes total sense. And right. And so we're told, you know, that this, that, and the other are wiped away, and now wipe away the wiping
Right,
away.
right.
It's like it's like if you decide to be a good Buddhist and you give away all your possessions, then you have to give away the giving away, or you're
Right.
going to be stuck in with this kind of saintly, you know, complex.
Right.
And think that you're this really cool guy because you did this. And so wiping away the wiping away, absolutely.
Yeah. And there is a final answer. There's nothing but final answers. It really is. You know, what is here? What is coming up? That's the final answer. It's when we hold on to it and, you know, bring this forward into the next moment. It's like, but that's the answer. And Alan, you can help me out here if you want, but I can't remember one Japanese poet. So it's common for Zen masters towards the end of their life that they will write a death poem, their final poem. And there was one, as one of our ancestors was adamant that every poem is a death poem. And so no need to write a special one because every poem is a death poem. So there's always the final answer, no ending of final answers. And don't hold on and drag that answer to the next moment. This is the final answer.
So we'll end with you, Beth.
I just wanted to mention there's a book called The Hidden Lamp that's Buddhist stories that are women's stories. So if women would like to read more, and there's a lot in there with some different images like the spiritual embryo, I found that good. So.
Yeah, wonderful collection. And in fact, the Iron Grinder Lu Koan is in that collection. Yeah, as well as stories about living teachers, ancient teachers. Yeah, it's a great resource.
Yeah, and Melissa Roshi is one of the teachers in there,
One of the
who,
commentators.
one of the commentators.
Yeah, thanks, Beth. All right, thanks everyone. Bowing to you. And we'll return to our practice.